Thank you, Carrie. Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you guys and good to be together. And we echo what Justin was saying, both by way of thanks to those of you who've helped with Camp Watermill, and also congratulations to our graduates and their families, your families. Thanks to Carrie Lyons especially for setting up a way for us to congratulate these young men and women of whom we're so proud. Recently in our Wednesday evening visits, I've been asking our families to tell me something which they in their lives will regard as not having changed, something that was real and genuine and true and valuable before all of this present off-schedule thing type unexpected event happens, what will be genuine and real and true and valuable in their lives when all of this is over again, and what is real and genuine and true and valuable right now in the middle of all of it. I've appreciated the answers that I've gotten, and I hope you've gotten to listen in and think about that too. This morning, I want to try to encourage our faith by reminding us of one of those unchanging, real, true, valuable things that all of us embrace when we confess that we believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And it is who Jesus said are the ones who are blessed. The ones who get the very best that this life has to offer, and who also enjoy the favor of God, both here and later on. The ones that he says are blessed is something that's easy to take for granted. It's easy for us to assume that since we have heard these sayings since we were small children, many of us, that we've got them. And then we get into episodes in our lives like the one we're currently passing through, which tend to reveal whether or not that's really the persons we are or not. And the thing is, these sayings of Jesus, these blessings of Jesus, are describing the thing which is really and truly the most basic and the most essential difference between the church and the world that we live in. We like to think to ourselves that the big difference is some doctrine believed or some practice that occurs, but really the thing that lies underneath and at the basis of all of those are these blessings spoken by Jesus. I believe that these blessings might be something that will be helpful in guiding our graduates into a future that will be new to them, as all future is, I suppose. I think that these things might help to inform us about what's appropriate in our lives with regard to whatever happens in our community this week, whatever our leaders ask of us, and whatever we end up needing to do. These are things that also might inspire us or encourage us in passing through things like our beloved families are dealing with, and Jason mentioned in our prayer a few moments ago. So think about this passage with us, what we know as the Beatitudes, which are, of course, the preamble of what's also known as the Sermon on the Mount. The teaching of Jesus in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is the longest lesson that he taught, and is also the deepest in many ways and the most challenging teaching ever among human beings. So let's try to to think about this in a little different way. And I simply want to try to make three big points that I hope we can take with us when we're finished today. First, when Jesus speaks these words, he is giving to his hearers the good news of the kingdom. This that he is saying is the good news of the kingdom. It's not as much, these Beatitudes are not as much a challenging commandment given to the people listening to him as they are a hopeful, joyous announcement that he's making to them. And that's how I hope we can hear them today. This is what Jesus announces as the good news of the kingdom. Matthew tells us in verse 23 of chapter 4 that when Jesus says this, he is proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. Now, looking back a little bit to the beginning of Jesus' ministry as it's described in Matthew 4, notice that verses 16 and 17 tells us that as soon as the people dwelling in darkness see a great light, and as the light dawns on those who are in the shadow of death, verse 16, Jesus begins telling them that they need to change their loyalty, they need to change their direction, because the kingdom of heaven is at hand. He's announcing the presence of what they've been hoping for all along. When people begin hearing about the kingdom of heaven, then they begin to be blessed by the good that Jesus does, Jesus the King does. And if you look in chapter 4, verse 23 and following, associated with the gospel of the kingdom, there is, in verse 24, relief for those who are afflicted with various pains and those who are oppressed by all the forces of evil that are brought against them. Afflicted and oppressed. Afflicted and oppressed. That's the human condition. That explains a lot of what people are going through these days in our country. That explains a lot about what's on our mind in our culture these days. Afflicted and oppressed. The kingdom of heaven strikes against, the presence of the kingdom of heaven strikes against those big problems. And when people begin to hear about the good that's in the kingdom of heaven, they are being blessed by the very things that the righteous people and the prophets of old had longed to be able to see and to hear. For people to see and to hear what Jesus is doing and what he is telling them is the fulfillment of centuries-long hopes and dreams. In chapter 13 of Matthew, at verses 16 and 17, Jesus said, "But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it." We take things for granted that we have heard and seen. To us, it's an old story. To these people, though, Jesus is announcing what a blessing this time and this news is for them. I think it's helpful in reading the Beatitudes and contemplating what Jesus is saying to realize that everything he says here is saturated with the language and the thought of Isaiah and Isaiah's expectation of the Messiah and what his coming and his presence would mean. I'd like to just call our imaginations for a while to some of the sayings from Isaiah that come to bear here. Isaiah's language is poetic, it's beautiful, it's familiar, but if you will have this in your mind as we think about the blessings that Jesus says, I think it will help. We started in Matthew 4, verses 14, 15, 16. It's a quote from Isaiah chapter 9. And in Isaiah chapter 9, following that quote, is the statement, "To us a child is born and a son is given." That's Isaiah 9 and 6. And it tells us that he will be the Prince of Peace, that he'll be the one upon whose shoulder the government will be, and the increase of his government will be peace, and that he will establish on the throne of his father David, justice and righteousness from this time forth and evermore. Peace, justice, and righteousness associated with the rule of Jesus. Remember that as we go along. In chapter 11 of Isaiah, Isaiah talks about the descendant of Jesse who's coming, and that the Spirit of the Lord will be on him, and he'll delight in the fear of the Lord, and he will with righteousness judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth, Isaiah says. Righteousness shall be the belt of his waist, and faithfulness the belt of his loins. The wolf will dwell with the lamb, he says, indicating in a beautiful way the peace that comes through him. Move over to Isaiah 35. The dry, weary deserts begin to bloom with beautiful flowers. Isaiah says in verse 3, "Strengthen the weak hands, make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who have an anxious heart, be strong and fear not." It talks about the approach of God who comes with vengeance against evil and recompense on behalf of his people. He comes to save us, he says. "The eyes of the blind will be opened, the ears of the deaf will be unstopped. The lame man shall leap like a deer, the tongue of the mute shall sing for joy. For waters break forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water." He's not really talking about ground, he's talking about lives. A little later, Isaiah says, "The ransomed of the Lord shall return. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads, and they shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away." These are the things the prophets taught the people to hope for. Move on a little farther with me over to Isaiah 61. In Isaiah 61, beginning at 1, Isaiah looks forward to the one who comes. "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, and because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor, he sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of prison to those who are bound." Or some of the versions will have, "the opening of the eyes to those who are blind, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant to those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes, the ashes of grief, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, a garment of praise instead of a faint spirit." That's a change needed in so many of our lives. Look on over now to Isaiah 65, down at verse 17. Notice the language associated with the Messiah's work. "For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former things shall not be remembered or come into mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create." And then the chapter 66 in verse 2. "All these things my hand has made, and so all these things came to be, declares the Lord. But this is the one to whom I will look, who is humble and contrite in spirit and trembles at my word." Think of the change now that Isaiah is anticipating. and you'll understand something of what it potentially could have meant in human life to hear the good news of the kingdom, to have it announced, this is what's happening, this is the time. Now, associated with that is this next step, and it is that this is the character of the kingdom. Character really doesn't do justice to the word I'm looking for. I'd say this is the combination of the disposition and the attitude and the character of the kingdom. That's what we're really talking about, what Jesus really is talking about here. If you look through now, look at what he pronounces to be blessed. Look at the kind of character that he is bringing good news for. There, and it helps if you kind of bear in mind as we go along, these are not eight different things. These are description of one kind of person, maybe in different kinds of circumstances or situations in life. So instead of getting lost with eight things, think of one person and different aspects of this person's character and attitude and spirit. Poor in spirit. This is someone who knows that his life is a gift from God that he can't sustain on his own. He knows of his own frailties and failures and weaknesses. He doesn't walk around with big claims about his rights and what he will insist on doing or not doing. There is a humility, but deeper really than humility here. This is the humble and contrite heart that Isaiah said God would look to, and that Jesus is saying the Messiah will be open to the Messiah's rule. They mourn, the poor in spirit mourn over the sin in their own lives and the injustice and unrighteous in the world. The poor in spirit grieve over the hurt that this causes to the heart of God. The poor in spirit are brokenhearted that we human beings could ever be comfortable with the kind of wrongdoing and injustice and unrighteousness that hurts people and spoils their lives and breaks God's heart. But this mourning doesn't make the person described here selfish or hard-hearted or indifferent. It says that they are meek. Verse 5. The word for meek is, you'll notice in comparing translation, must be a hard one to translate. Sometimes it gets translated gentle, but it means something more than just that. The meek persons in Scripture are only two. You know who they are? Moses, Numbers chapter 12, and Jesus, what he says of himself over in Matthew 11, I'm meek and lowly in heart. Neither of these characters are weak. Both of them are strong enough to do what God sent them to do without being defensive, without being individuals who tried to guard their place and insist on their own ways and rights. Their strength comes under God's control and is used for His purposes instead. These individuals are not content to let things be like they are in the world. They hunger and thirst for righteousness, like someone who is famishing with hunger, someone who would be dying of thirst. That person wants, seeks after, is drawn to, longs for real righteousness. The nature of God, right relationship with Him, the right thing in their lives and in good relations with the people around them. They are merciful. They don't become self-righteous. Mercy means kindness, generosity, forgiveness, thoughtfulness, consideration. All of those things are different aspects of mercy. knowing their own poverty of spirit, mourning over the wrong and the weakness in life, being gentle toward other people, wanting what's right, they can be merciful to the weaknesses and faults in other people's lives. These blessed ones can. They're pure in heart. We think immediately of just being clean. Probably the word means more unmixed or single-hearted or genuine, sincere. There's nothing two-faced about this time. There's no role-playing. There's no pretending in these hearts. These individuals are peacemakers. I noticed our young people this past week, these exiles among us, studying 1 Peter, they noticed that being holy, sharing in the nature of God, means having a place in His reconciling work in the world. The peacemaker is a reconciling presence in the world among the people God made in His image. Francis of Assisi's prayer is the best definition of peacemaking I ever ran across. Lord, make me an instrument of Thy peace, that where there's hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. The Lord's people don't get days off from that being our task and the importance of our presence. And there are no issues that come along in society that excuse us from this disposition. And then they are sometimes persecuted for their efforts to do the things that I just mentioned. In other words, the faith that started out in its infancy with the poverty of spirit and began to develop and deepen and mature gets to the place where it stands for this kind of spirit and is willing even to pay the price for it and still stay with it, still be that. This kind of spirit overcomes a lot and stays with it because of that's really who it is. That's really who the individual is. Now, what happens in the Sermon on the Mount is that Jesus says the importance of these kind of character traits, this kind of spirit, this kind of disposition and attitude, is that this is what makes a person responsive to the teaching of the King and willing to abide by the things that Jesus teaches in the rest of this these three chapters. If you just look down through it, you'll see kind of what I'm getting at. You come down here to verse 41. Here's the individual who you can force him to go 1 mile, and he'll just go with you 2. Or here's the individual who, like God, would want there to be rain and sunshine on the evil and the good, the just and the unjust, to be like the Father in that way. Or who, in chapter 6 and verse 1, practice righteousness not because people are watching and when they are, but because they're in God's presence, and that's who they are. And here are the individuals who are not trying to lay up the treasures that moth and rust are going to consume and thief can make breakthrough and steal. Not anxious over life and clothes and food and drink, because they seek one thing. They're not in the habit of taking God's place of judging the other people around them because they know they have specks in their own eyes they need to tend to first. They practice the golden rule, doing to others as they wish others would do to them, and so on. So you see, this kind of character makes people open to doing the hard things that Jesus is describing in the rest of the chapter. So this is the good news of the kingdom. This is the character of the kingdom. And then these are the benefits of the kingdom. Before we go back over the list and kind of look at them, I ran across some years ago now a little piece, really a paragraph from Henry Van Dyke. Henry Van Dyke was an author, a diplomat, I think a Presbyterian preacher probably, who died in 1933. And one of the things that I've read from him is his description of what a worthwhile life, what a content life, what a satisfied life would be. Van Dyke says it's to be glad of life, to get to the place where you can be glad of life because it gives you the chance to love and to work and to play and to look up at the stars, and to be satisfied with your possessions but not contented with yourself until you've made the best use of them, to despise nothing in the world except falsehood and meanness, to fear nothing except cowardice, to be governed by your admirations rather than your dislikes, to covet nothing that your neighbors except his kindness of heart and gentleness of manner, to think seldom of your enemies, often of your friends, and every day of Christ. That'd be a success. Well, compare the general tone of that to what Jesus says comes to those who are of the character of the kingdom that he's talked about here. He uses the word blessed, and it's translated, oh, the blessedness of, oh, how fortunate are, or oh, how happy are. And then he describes those who, to the ones who are this each of these different things. And notice carefully that the first one of these, verse 3, has the same blessing attached to it as the last one of these, verse 10. It might be that these two sayings are meant to describe different aspects of one thing, but one thing it says to me is that probably these are meant to all be included in this one life. This one kind of person's one life. At different times and different situations, every one of us needs all of these blessings. And that's what Jesus says are the benefits of being ruled by Him. So look through them real quick. There's the kingdom of heaven. To enjoy the kingdom of heaven in this sense, if you compare chapter 6 and verse 10, and if you remember that Hebrew used parallelism, you have us praying, your kingdom come, your will be done. The poor in spirit can have the blessing of God's will being done in their lives. Then, comforted. Comforted means strengthened or encouraged or made to know that all is well. And to be able to live. To inherit the earth means to enjoy, to be blessed by what life here can provide. To inherit the earth is the great expectation of the wisdom of the Old Testament. Psalm 37 mentions it, I think, four or five times. And it's to say, this is what you'll find what you need, and you'll find what you're longing for this way. To be satisfied is the gift of contentment. To receive mercy is like the pipeline that flows two ways. Having been merciful, mercy can come back. In the prayer, in the model prayer, Jesus will teach us to pray, "Forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debtors." And that's what this is talking about here. "Pure in heart shall see God." In other words, rather than hearing His voice walking in the garden in the cool of the day and hiding, the pure in heart can be at home in God's presence. This is our great hope as Christians, 1 John 3 and verse 2, or Revelation 22 and verses 3 and 4. They'll be called children of God, sons of God, to be known as God's family. These are His people who have hearts like this. This is how you know the people are like Him. And then theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Maybe here the sense of it is more like what Jesus mentions in verse 12. "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven." Or maybe here the idea is like what Jesus says in verse 20. "Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break through and steal," to have permanent blessings. Here are the blessed, according to Jesus. They were this time last year. They will be this time next year. And they are right now. The most basic, most essential difference between the church and the world is whether we believe that and whether we are that. The time we live in tells the story. Our responses to the time we live in tells the story of whether that's who we are. This is either like looking in a mirror and seeing your reflection, or looking at the backside of a sign and seeing nothing except emptiness. This either encourages us or puzzles us. This picture presented in the Beatitudes is the hill Jesus was willing to die on. Makes us examine if it's the hill we're willing to die on too. What are we willing to have happen for us to show that this is who we are? These are the people we are. Wherever you're going in this next week, this will be a good way to find your bearings and to know what's the thing that the Lord's people do. In looking at this passage, we end up being confronted mostly with whether Jesus is right. Do we take His word for it, or are we drawn by the world, which pretty much tells us the opposite of all these things? You know, get your way, do what you think, all that kind of thing. And do we believe He can give us the blessings that He's talked about in this passage here? This morning, as we draw near to the Lord's Supper, we remember that Jesus gave Himself up for us to deal with us in the ways where we're not like this, and that we receive the blessings He offers by deciding to be like this. If you're here today and you're needing to make the good confession to be baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins, choose to do that. If you're somebody who's drifted away from that and need to come back to the blessed, then this is a good day for that. This morning, while we're turning our attention toward the thing that unites us, we're going to sing the song. And we invite you, if you need to come and let us help you do what you need to do to express your faith in the Lord. Will you please be standing while Carrie Saint leads us?